This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everybody, it's the Hockey News Podcast. For the first time in a while, we have the usual suspects almost here physically in the flesh. Ryan Kennedy is sitting across from me, and Ken Campbell is joining us live via satellite or an old landline phone in our conference room. How you doing, Kenny boy?
Just great. Thanks for having me. Long time listener, first time caller. Thanks for having me, man.
I'll hang up and listen.
That's right. Yeah. How's the Stanley Cup final hangover there, Kenny boy, in Nashville?
Actually, there is a bit of a hangover tonight. Today, I've got a bit of a headache. I had too many beers last night after the final game, so I'm treading lightly today. But you know, yeah, you've seen me play hurt before, Matt.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
You've probably seen it too, Ryan. You've seen me play hurt. I can play hurt.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Now you can play with a lot of maladies.
It's all out.
Yeah,
that's right. So the Cup final is over. The season's over, and the thing that jumped in my mind right away was seeing Sidney Crosby hoist his third Stanley Cup and gets a second Conn Smythe. And it's a fair time to reassess his legacy yet again. And the question I've heard going around a lot lately is, where do you rank him now? Like, are we talking Sidney Crosby in the top five all time, top 10? Where do you guys have him right now?
Well, before this playoff, I had him in the top 10 already. When I ranked the top 100 players that the NHL wouldn't do, I had him in my top 10. And last night after the game, Jim Rutherford was adamant that he probably belongs in the top three or four. And I think it's pretty hard to disagree with the guy. I mean, you know, guys, this team that won this Stanley Cup, I don't want to say they had no business winning the Stanley Cup, but, I mean, it's pretty remarkable what they did. And, I mean, the bigger the game, the better Crosby played. I mean, game five, he was... I mean, he basically said, you know, jump on my back and I'll get you one here. So, you know, I mean, back-to-back Conn Smythe, I mean, I suppose you could have given Evgeny Malkin the Conn Smythe and it would have been, I don't think anybody would have complained for sure. But back-to-back Conn Smythe, three Stanley Cups, you know, the guy reinvents himself every couple of years. You know, last year in the playoffs, he channeled his inner Steve Yzerman and was the best two-way player on the ice. And then this year, all he does is go out and score more goals than everybody else. So I would have to agree with that. I think he belongs with the greatest who have ever played the game.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you, Ken. What's interesting is when you actually start naming those players and you sort of say, like, okay, Gretzky or Howe, Lemieux, and then you sort of get into territory where it's like, Maurice Richard? Yeah. And then you look at the comparisons, and it's like, well, you know, like, Richard couldn't win the Rocket Richard because he was Rocket Richard. He can't win the him, but he would have won it five times, but he only had one Hart Trophy. You know, I don't think he won the Art Ross Trophy at all.
I don't believe he did. You're right.
Yeah, Crosby obviously has done both, like you said, the Conn Smythe. And, you know, the fun little game I like to play is, you know, if Maurice Richard was trying to score, could Sidney Crosby shut him down? If Crosby's trying to score, could Maurice Richard shut him down? You know, you can make the same argument about Bobby Hull, for example, another player that historically has been pretty high on these lists. And it's funny because we're living in the now and we haven't seen the end of Crosby's career, but I think it's legitimate to have these conversations and say, yeah, like, he belongs in that sort of top five range.
And it's a great point you said, Ryan, about the one-on-one hypothetical battles, because to me it raises another question. You know, I'm not saying I would put Sid number one, number two, probably not number three, but I think he does belong like on that top five periphery. And I start to wonder, if you look at all the forwards in the history of the game, is there a more complete one than Sidney Crosby? Because even if you think of Wayne Gretzky or Mario Lemieux, I don't think either of them was ever known for his defensive play. They were just absolute forces of nature offensively. And Bobby Orr, the same thing. So I start to wonder, I mean, if you factor in the well-roundedness of Sid, I think he climbs the list even more.
Yeah, I think you're right, Matt. And, you know, I mean, people, I've heard him called, you know, the world's most talented, you know, plumber, or the world's most talented, you know, worker. And that's absolutely true. And I don't think you can discount the fact that Sidney Crosby is the best player in the world at a time when players have never been better.
Yes.
So, I mean, when you put it in that context, I mean, you gotta think he's there. I mean, in 20 years, somebody else is gonna be the best player in the world, and players are gonna be better than they are now. But, like, I mean, I just keep going back. The guy's generally acknowledged as right now the best player in the world, has been for quite a while, and it's in an era when players have never been as well coached, as well prepared, as, you know, they're better than they've ever been.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And while we're talking about, you know, top five, top 10 players of all time, I just want to use this podium as an opportunity to make the case for Dominik Hasek, my man crush. He won, I think, 5 Vezinas in 6 years, 2 MVPs in a row, didn't start his career in the NHL till his late 20s. So to me, he's a guy that I put almost top five all time. I put him number one among goaltenders. Some people don't agree, but I don't see how you couldn't consider him, considering how dominant he was, and he didn't even get to play his prime years in the NHL, which absolutely blows my mind. So I just wanted to give a little shout out to the Dominator. That's just my agenda.
Yeah, I had him number four on my list when I did it at the All-Star game, and I mean, you could debate whether he's that high, but to me, I mean, one thing is clear: he's the best guy. He's the best goalie who's ever played in the history of the NHL, in my opinion.
Woo! Yes, Ken. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Sticking with the Penguins, do you think this team, I mean, no one thought they could repeat because no one repeats in the salary cap era. Do we now have to consider them as a threat to three-peat, or would that be asking too much?
Oh, I think we have to consider them a threat to three-peat. Just by virtue of the fact that for the same reason that you can never count them out. I would never discount the possibility of a team with Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby on it, and a 23-year-old Matt Murray now, who's got 2 Stanley Cups under his belt. I would never discount their possibility of winning. This is a team that Mike Sullivan said it last night. From day one of training camp, he said, you know, history tells us that we can't repeat. Well, we want to write our own story, and I think this team can. Will it? Boy, that's a tough order. I mean, to go 3 years, the only thing that I think would prevent them from doing it is to go 3 years that deep in the playoffs, plus having a World Cup. That's going to be a tough order. It's the hardest trophy in sports to win. And it's the hardest trophy in sports to win just once. To win it twice, I mean, it hasn't happened in 20 years for a reason. And to win it 3 times would be remarkable. It's not impossible, but if I were, you know, I mean, I saw that somebody put out the odds for, you know, the Stanley Cup for next year, and the Penguins are 9-1. They're the best odds to win the Stanley Cup. I wouldn't bet on them, but I don't know if I'd bet against them either.
I think the biggest thing they have working in their favor is that, barring something unforeseen, they're getting Chris Letang back. They're going to have a number one defenseman next year that they didn't have the entire playoffs, that they didn't have at the end of the season. And they're still going to have Sid and Gino, still having Matt Murray in net. They're going to lose, you know, a lot of the older guys were probably, you know, Matt Cullen, he's going to be gone. You know, Chris Kunitz is probably going to be gone by a free agency. But they, you know, they still have young guys that can take on bigger roles. We're going to see a full year of Jake Guentzel, and we're going to see what Carter Rowney can do full time, or at least in a heightened role. And, you know, Connor Sheary hasn't actually played that much hockey in the NHL at this point, and he's already got that great experience. Justin Schultz will be back.
Watch out for Daniel Sprong. He'll eventually get his shot, too.
Daniel Sprong will get his chance as well. With him, it's just a matter of, you know, they don't need to rush him, and they want him to flesh out his defensive game, even though he is such an offensive force up front. But, yeah, if you needed him in the playoffs, maybe he's next year's Jake Guentzel. So, for me, I think you're probably looking early on at, like, Tampa Bay as a favorite in the East, and there's a couple teams in the West. you know, I mean, Chicago, if they can get things sorted around, Dallas has a couple moves to make, but the foundation's there. But, I mean, if Pittsburgh did three-peat, I'm with Ken. Like, it wouldn't shock me.
It's interesting. I agree that their window for them has not closed as long as their superstars are still in their primes and playing great hockey. And like you said, Ken, Matt Murray's young. What's interesting to me is that the Penguins this year, they broke the trend of really good analytics and teams with great Corsi winning the Cup. I think it was seven teams in a row that were top three or something. And this year broke the trend. And historically, teams have been able to have one good year with bad Corsi, but it doesn't last. So like Calgary did a couple years ago, then missed the playoffs. Leafs did it in 2012-13, then missed the playoffs. Colorado did it 13-14, missed the playoffs. And not saying at all that Penguins are going to miss the playoffs, but it seems like the model, if you're getting out-attempted often, the Penguins did throughout these playoffs, that's not usually sustainable year to year. You can get lucky, or, you know, lucky is too strong a word. Obviously, Pittsburgh is not lucky. But there were a lot of games in these playoffs when we said, hey, they got outplayed tonight, but they got by in goaltending, stuff like that. So I wouldn't bet on them for that reason. But at the same time, I mean, they're still going to be stacked. They're still going to be a threat. And they have the experience edge over almost everybody. Switching gears to the Preds, who just fell in six games. PK Subban, I saw talking to David Amber on TV after the game. He said, he kept saying over and over, we'll be back next year, we'll be back next year. And I mean, hey, the Penguins in 08, they got their hearts broken in the final and they came back. Do you guys see the Preds, you know, 16 seed, was this sort of a year where everything went right? Or is this the start of something and are they going to be contending for a while now?
Well, I think, you know, my point about the Preds is that, okay, this year I think has put to bed the notion that they're the plucky Preds. They shouldn't be considered that anymore, either on or off the ice, you know? I mean, they've established, you know, they sold out every game this year. You know, they had a long playoff run, I think 11 play home playoff dates. There was more than 100,000 people watching the game outside last night. So this is a team now that I think has to graduate into legitimate status of legitimacy as a market and definitely as a team. I mean, I think, you know, with this defense corps, as you said, Matt, I mean, this year was kind of an outlier as far as, you know, possession numbers and just, I mean, the whole playoffs was bizarre. So, but with a defense like that, you should be contending for a good number of years. What the Predators have to do is they got to get a little better down the middle. They just got to. I mean, the loss of Ryan Johansson was they couldn't overcome it. I mean, Colton Sissons, you know, came in and did a pretty good job, and he played really well last night. And he probably won't be sleeping very well for the next couple of nights after, mm-hmm. you know, getting stopped on a breakaway, hitting a post, and having a goal called back. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think they've got to improve down the middle, and I think they've got to improve sort of in that bottom six area. And if they can do that, I don't see any reason why this team shouldn't be in the mix. Will they be in the final next year? I don't know. Will they be in the final ever again? I don't know. But what I can tell you is that this is a team that should be in the mix as a legitimate Stanley Cup contender every year for the next X number of years, let's say 5 years. There's no reason to believe that these guys cannot be in that sort of group of teams that is a legitimate threat to win a Stanley Cup.
I'm a little more bearish on the Preds right now, simply because I think we've seen the beginning of the end for Pekka Rinne. Even though he had some fantastic stretches in the playoffs, we also saw what happened pretty much every time in Pittsburgh when he wasn't on his game. And as an aging netminder, you don't go down and then go back up again. You know, that's pretty rare for netminders. When it goes south, it goes south. And, you know, with all due respect to UC Saros, I think he would need a little more time before he could really seize the mantle. Totally agree on the defense corps. I mean, that's a huge advantage for them. It's a great engine that drives that team, and they definitely need help up front with their forward core. I see them as a team that, I mean, certainly their window is open, but I can definitely see them like losing in the first round next year to a pretty good team, and then, you know, the year after that, maybe they go on another extended run. I feel like they, you know, they sort of played above their station this year, and certain players played very well for them. But the long-term goalie prospects kind of worries me.
It's funny. I'm actually more bullish than bearish, and I agree Rene is a major problem. And if you look at his splits, like the struggling in Pittsburgh was not an anomaly. His entire career, regular season, playoffs, like crazy contrast home and road splits. So that's a big problem, 100%, and I do think it's got to be addressed eventually. But if you look at so many of the important players on the Preds right now, you know, 31 goals from Forsberg and Arvidsson, they're both very young. Every member of the big four on defense, all in their 20s, still absolutely in their prime, very young. Johansson's young. And to me, we know David Poile is a super aggressive GM. He's willing to make trades every single year to improve his team. And I would not be surprised at all to see him say, pick up the phone, call Colorado and say, we want Matt Duchene. We know Matt Duchene would love to come here. He's a country music boy.
Sure.
We'll give you our best defensive prospect, Dante Fabbro, and a first-round pick, blah, 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 blah. Done deal. I would not be surprised at all, especially because Poile got this close now. He knows that his team is good and came very close, even outplayed Pittsburgh in Game 1 and 2 and lost those games. So I see them staying aggressive, trying to improve their team and win now. I still think they're in the window, even though, yes, I couldn't agree more that Rene is a big problem going forward. Bob Bugner just got a new head coaching gig, Florida Panthers. Ryan, you're kind of a Bugner expert. You followed him up through his rise in the junior ranks, and I know you talked to people close to him today. What's your take on the Boogeyman?
Well, I think this is a very nice hire for the Panthers. I spoke with Warren Reichel, who helped purchase the Windsor Spitfires with Bugner. And, you know, Reichel was the GM. Well, Reichel is still the GM, just won his third Memorial Cup. Bugner was the coach to begin with during their tenure. They won back-to-back Memorial Cups with guys like Taylor Hall, Ryan Ellis, you know, both drafted by Windsor, Adam Henrique, Cam Fowler. They put together a great organization there. And, you know, what Reichel said to me was that, you know, Bugner is very organized, very calculated. You know, he knows how to press buttons with guys. He knows that not everybody can be treated the same. You know, some guys need to be leaned on a little bit more. Some guys, you kind of give them their space. He was able to, you know, negotiate that and create championship teams of, let's face it, volatile teenagers, what teenagers are not. But, you know, at the end of the day, he's a coach that players will enjoy playing for because, you know, it is a meritocracy. Even if you're young, you know, if you prove that you deserve that ice time, he'll give it to you. And you look at the Panthers, I mean, pretty much all their good players are young right now. So that bodes pretty well there. And I just feel like Florida wasn't that far off this year. You know, they had some bad injuries and there was a lot of turmoil in terms of the personnel. You know, whether it was behind the bench or in the front office, and it looks stabilized now, so I think that'll help. But I feel Bugner really brings a lot of good aspects of coaching, and this is his first run at an NHL team. He's been an assistant coach in San Jose and Columbus, so I think it's gonna be fun to watch what he can do.
And it's interesting too because I've heard a lot of chatter that Bugner kind of has a player's coach and, you know, really can identify, connect with guys similar to Gerard Gallant. And I always found it interesting because I thought Gallant's firing was questionable considering how much turnover the Panthers roster had year over year. Like, they had that amazing season, franchise record for points, and they turned over half their team. And then they blamed the coach when they have a different product on the ice. So to me, the hiring of Bugner might almost be a subtle way of saying, yeah, we shouldn't have fired Gallant, so we're going to get a Gallant type just to say sorry, that was our mistake, I don't know.
It's a make good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Gallant was definitely a player's coach, and guys really enjoyed playing for them. You know, from talking to Reichel, he was saying, you know, Bugner will put the hammer down when he needs to. But I think that's kind of par for the course these days. I mean, and it was interesting because Reichel was saying, you don't have a lot of yellers anymore in the NHL. The coaches they can't just yell at players. It's not the culture of the game anymore. But Bugner can get his point across and still be likable. And, you know, he's an ex-player himself, so he's been through the wars. So, I think it'll be interesting to see. And, yeah, I think the Panthers probably pulled the trigger too quickly on Gallant. But now they can kind of make good with Bugner.
Well, Ryan, you know more about whether or not Bob Bugner will be a top coach in the NHL than I do. I mean, will he be a great coach in the NHL? I don't know, because I thought Mike Johnson was going to be a great coach in the NHL.
Very true.
You know, and now he's watching the team that he had win 2 Stanley Cups without him. So I think there are other factors that go into it. The one thing I think you can say about Bugner is, like, he's prepared for this. You know, he's not coming into a situation where he's going to be out of his element. I mean, you know, as you went through his laundry list of accomplishments and his coaching jobs, and I think in the NHL, to be a good NHL coach, you either have had to have your own bench in the American Hockey League, or you had to have been an assistant. And I mean, now Bugner's, you know, been an assistant for a while with 2 teams. You know, he's had his own bench in the OHL. There's no reason to believe that he won't be prepared for this, and I don't think he's going to see anything that's going to surprise him.
I like that term, had his own bench. Never heard that before. It sounds very buzzy. I'm a fan. We got some time for a few reader questions. We got some really good ones this week, so we'll try to get to as many as we can. First one, Brendan Betez at Hockey Malarkey just straight up throws it out there. Early Cup favorites for next year.
I'll go with the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think they're set up really well. I think they will definitely have a huge chip on their shoulders from missing the playoffs this season. Healthy Stamkos. You know, Vasilevskiy knows he's number one in the crease right now. Victor Hedman still chugging along as a Norris Trophy candidate. I think they have all the elements they need.
Don't say Washington. Yeah, I'm not saying Washington, okay?
Okay, bro.
I think Chicago's going to have a bounce back next year. I think Edmonton could be a real sort of sneaky, sneaky good team in terms of, you know, being a legitimate contender. I think you've got to put Pittsburgh in there as well. So, yeah, I would go with those guys.
Obviously the offseason will determine it. Like, we'll see who makes the big moves. But the team that's stuck in my head so far is Edmonton. The McDavid factor alone, you know, he's still on the short list of the top 2 best players in the world, top 3 at worst. And he's only getting better. He's already the most dominant offensive force in the game. The Oilers, they proved a lot in the playoffs. They've got size now with Lucic and Zach Cashin, Patrick Maroon. That Klefbom and Larson defensive pairing is starting to emerge as a workhorse tandem. And I'm a huge Cam Talbot fan, always have been. I think he's super underrated, played the most minutes. And to me, what was really encouraging about Talbot, he played the most minutes, most games, most shots. So biggest possible sample size, and his numbers were still great this year. And I don't think Peter Shirelli's done tinkering with that group. So to me, the early contender I have in my mind, Edmonton. Next question comes from Matty O at RJ Johnson 012. What is a good return for Chris Tanev in a trade, and who are the most likely defense to be dealt in the next 2 weeks? As an aside, we did talk about most likely to be traded last week in the podcast. I said Sammy Vatanen, so we'll get that out of the way. And maybe, Ryan, what do you think about Chris Tanev?
Well, I think in Tanev, you're looking at one of the most highly coveted defenseman around right now because of the kind of game he plays, you know, because of the mobility and the shutdown presence that he has. If I'm a team that comes knocking for Tanev, it's got to be like a first and a high-end prospect, maybe even a roster player, not necessarily a great one, but a roster player, because you still got him locked down for a couple more years at a very nice cap hit, less than $5 million. That's fantastic. So let's just say, for example, like Toronto would be a great fit for him in terms of what the Maple Leafs need. So if I'm Vancouver and Toronto comes knocking, I say, all right, we want a first either this year or next year. Next year could be a stronger draft. And then a top prospect, whether you want to replace on defense, maybe you go with like Travis Dermott, or if you just straight up want a really good prospect, you ask for Kasperi Kapanen and see where you go from there. And then maybe there's a roster player on top of it. Depends on how everything else shakes out. But that to me would be the example of the type of package you would have to bring to Vancouver to get the wheels moving.
I think you're bang on. To me, Chris Tanev is kind of like a poor man's Mark Edward Vlasic. Not even a poor man. Like a upper middle class Mark Edward Vlasic.
Upper Canada Mark Edward Vlasic.
Because he's got mobility. So he's got the mobility of an offensive defenseman, but he plays more of a shutdown game.
Yeah.
And I think he's worth a lot right now in his prime. Someone asked me on Twitter last week about Dallas trading the number 3 overall pick. And I think an example would be the number 3 pick plus Esa Lindell for Chris Tanev. Mm. I think that's... So it's very similar to what you're saying, Ryan. A first and a roster player slash prospect is what I would envision for Tanev.
I'd be a bit of a contrarian here, guys, quickly.
Yeah.
I like Chris Tanev. I think he's a little overvalued, to be honest with you. I think if any team gives up a whole boatload of assets to get this guy, they're creating an expectation that I'm not sure can be fulfilled. I know he's got great analytics. I get all that. Two goals last year, guys. Two goals.
But that's not what they pay him for.
That's right.
And on Vancouver.
But I'm just saying, okay, that's great. But if you're going to give up the farm for a guy, you want a guy that's going to be an all-around defenseman. You want a guy who's going to be able to create some offense. And this guy really doesn't. He doesn't drive much offensively. And personally, I think, like I said, if this becomes some great big blockbuster trade, then I think you've created a huge amount of expectation that I'm not sure is ever going to be met.
Here's one thought on that. You got me thinking there, Ken. What if he were to go to the Edmonton Oilers as kind of the final piece they need? You don't need scoring because you got McDavid and Draisaitl and all that. But you do need a couple more defensemen, especially because Sakara is going to start the season on the shelf. Maybe you're not giving up, as you say, a boatload. But the Oilers at this point, they can give up picks. They can give up prospects. They're pretty good in that regard for a while. Maybe that's the kind of trade we need to think about. And the Leafs are probably another year or so away from truly contending. If you're buying into the Austin Matthews crew. But, Tanev's the kind of guy where you say, okay, how could he unleash Morgan Riley, on a particular Tanev? So it's not so much that Tanev's going to bring offense himself, but maybe his partner gets a boost because Tanev can hang back and cover up a lot of mistakes.
That's a good point. Very good point.
That's a good point.
Now let's just hope Chris Tanev does not get traded until this podcast is edited and posted. Please don't get traded.
Fingers crossed.
We'll end it. We got a couple more Penguins-related questions, just sort of as a farewell to the season. appropriately named, this account is called Uber CBJ Fan. So it's a Columbus fan account. I'm going to say it in the voice that I picture them asking it. Did the Penguins win the cup, or did the referees hand them the cup? I'll lead this off. No, 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 no. Yes, of course, there was a bad call that led to a goal that should have gone in last night. But also, Nashville had a whole bunch of power plays, didn't score on any of those. And those power plays, you could argue, were even out calls in the game. So I don't buy anything about Pittsburgh being handed the cup. You know who handed Pittsburgh the cup? Sidney Crosby. That's my answer.
Yeah, I'm not even sure we need to dignify this with a response, but, absolutely not. I mean, the referees, was the refereeing good in the Stanley Cup final? I don't believe it was very good, but, I mean, these are humans who make mistakes sometimes, and there's absolutely zero favoritism shown towards any team. If there were, L.A. and New York would be in the final every year, and if the NHL actually wanted to pick a winner of this Stanley Cup final, what would they rather have? The Penguins winning another cup in, 2 years, ho-hum, or, the most energized fan base in National Hockey League history, being able to celebrate and go bananas. It doesn't make any sense.
Agreed.
All right. Sorry for making fun of you, Uber CBJ fans, and please keep reading the hockey news. Last one. This is from Shorthanded News at Shorthanded News. I wonder what kind of news Shorthanded News, what they cover. I don't know. Does Pittsburgh's cup mean the end of the fancy stats hype?
I don't think it does. I'm not you know, I'm not a big one for the numbers, but I do think it offers some perspective to the whole situation. I think, you know, as our trusty numbers guru Dom Luchishin said today on Twitter, it wasn't a good year for math, and it wasn't. I mean, and so I think what we do now is we make that part of the equation. I mean that, you know, I mean, grit has to mean something, heart has to mean something, you know, resilience has to mean something, the ability to play spurt has to mean something, you know. But I mean, analytics track record is pretty good, and it's probably a lot better than the eyeball method at this point. It's probably got a far better success rate than the eyeball method at this rate. And I know I talked to an analytics guy who told me one time that, you know, I mean, if you just went off of if you simply drafted off of the top scorers from the Canadian Hockey League, you'd have a better draft record than, you know, the eyeball test that everybody's doing right now. If you had just not seen one of these players play and just drafted the next highest scorer in the Canadian Hockey League, you would have had a better draft record than all the, you know, than most of these other teams. So I still think it has a place. I still think it's very, very important, and I think it's only going to grow more important. But I think what this does is it offers a little bit of perspective.
Yeah. And it's also important to remember, particularly in the postseason when you have these smaller sample sizes, i.e. series, that goaltending can play a huge role. Just look at St. Louis beating Minnesota. You know, that was all Jake Allen in net for St. Louis. If they played that series 10 more times, Minnesota probably wins 8 of those 10. But you got to play the games, and sometimes that happens. And if you even look at Pittsburgh, they have their starter go down in warm-ups of game one. They just so happen to have another very good goalie in Marc-Andre Fleury, who already has a cup ring, come in and lead them again. And those are the sort of things that, those are the subtleties that the analytics might not be able to pick up on, and or at least key in on at those times.
And I think this year is a good reminder that the stats are not perfectly predictive yet. And I'm reminded of when the Leafs first hired Kyle Dubas a few years back, I interviewed him. And one thing he said was, listen, hockey stats are still 20 years behind baseball. They're still not nearly as accurate as they're going to be in terms of the advanced stats. And a perfect example is, like, possession. Corsi is used to approximate possession, but it's not actually holding onto the puck. It's just shot attempts. Corsi doesn't mean possession. It means shot attempts. People just call it possession because it's easier to say, and having a lot of shot attempts is an approximation of it, but really possession would be someone counting how long the puck is on your stick, right? So we're still not there. I still think the stats are pretty good year to year predicting. They're not going to be right all the time, but I'm sure in 20 more years, as Dubas said, we're going to have much better analytics that predict stuff way better than what we have now. Well, that's it for now, everybody. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for what's going to be a wild off season. We have the expansion draft coming up. The draft is coming up, and free agency, so we'll have lots of podcasts coming this summer. Thanks.